Okay, we're moving. Okay, first of all, today is March 19th, 2012, and once again, I extend greetings to the students in front of me and to the many who are listening all over the world. I just want to say in advance of today's lecture, I just want to put in, if I'm using the right word, a disclaimer, and very simply explain that I recognize that the masses need tangible figures, tangible acts, to use a colloquialism, to feel from. And I've often said, although I don't wear a black hat, and at times I have a lot of difficulty with the black hat, because it's like telling a student to put on a black hat and you're from. It's too easy. But I appreciate the fact that many people need that Hasidic identity, as Chabad puts it, Enash, Anshei Shlomeinu. And I've often said over the years in the Kollel, if you need a black hat to keep yourself from in America, wear two black hats. When Rabbi Ezra Starr came in Aliyah, he said to me, Rebbe, I survived America, came in Aliyah, and I didn't wear a black hat. I said, okay, you're the exception that proves the rule. So I just want to state that what I'm going into today, I recognize it's for intellectuals, it's for the Soloveitchiks. What can I tell you? It's for someone like myself who grew up sitting, imagine a little Bronx kid like myself, third generation American, parents born in Harlem, and Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, couldn't walk in and couldn't walk out without my standing up and letting him go past my chair. As you see from the picture, I blocked the Rav. So I just want to make it clear that what I'm talking about today is the way Halavai it could be if all of us really thought and were thinkers. And this is Torah Hashem Tamima. But I don't want to convince anyone not to believe in Das Torah and not to wear a black hat and be like a kefir if they don't have my background and my lifestyle. Okay. Now, last week was a very important shiur dealing with the Russian issue. And once again, I say that we can be very proud that what we did. We atoned to a certain degree for the Holocaust, although no one can atone from the Holocaust. And the loss of life, the loss of Jewish life, what Hitler did to us, and yet we rose from the ashes, and American kids and Canadian kids and British kids and South African kids and Australian kids and Israeli kids made up their mind that we will not desert Russian Jewry. And I went into the tshuva of Rav Henkin, which is the only tshuva I know of, and it's a wonderful tshuva, and how he analyzes the Gemara, and how he talks about Rav Moshe Feinstein and the Rav, and of course he's quite sarcastic at the end, which characterizes him too to a certain degree, because he's seen the right-wing world, and I don't want to go into detail now, but I once saw an incident before my eyes in the mid-70s, when he eulogized his grandfather, Rabbi Yosef Eliyahu Henkin, and he spoke about the Langer case, and he made clear how his grandfather didn't let any politics influence him, but paskin dal pi halacha, and there's a recording of the grandfather saying that he doesn't understand those that oppose Rav Gorin's heter for the Langer children, and I was present at the hesped, it was in Sanhedria, and I still recall that some Kanoim wanted to get up and push him off and beat the hell out of him, and Big Rabbanim signaled them to sit down, not to make an issue yet, and let him continue. So when he makes that statement at the end, Ketanim don't know how to change their minds, Gedolim know how, I sign on. And as I mentioned, one of the greatest embarrassments of my life was to see a great person like Rav Pinchas Teitz basically make a fool out of himself in front of the Mossad. And I have to tell you one word on the Mossad and its branches and the people that work for it. We are used to seeing politicians. I don't want to criticize politicians. I have no right to criticize politicians because I was once offered a very fine seat in the Knesset to be a candidate and a real chance of being elected by Reb Chaim Kudrukman. And I turned it down on the spot, telling Chaim, who I know yet from the times he used to come into the Rav Shiurim in the mid-50s and late-50s in America, tell him, Chaim, that ani lo mesugal lezeh, ani rak yechol davar chad v'chayim, ani yechol lelameh Torah yoshev, acharei ha-shulchan, chutz mizeh, ani lo yutzlachnik, v'yalach et kama v'kama liyot b'knesset Yisrael. So I don't want to criticize. Good people should go into politics, and I hope they remain good people. But I have to tell you, the people I met in the Mossad and intelligence, these were fabulous people. Some were religious, some were not. What united them was their care and concern for the Jewish people. And these were people that 724 lived with only one care and one concern. And I write about Aryeh Kroll in Washington. Read about it, and I hope a book will be coming out within a year that will give more details on Aryeh Kroll. But to know Aryeh Kroll was to know greatness. He was gruff, he was rough, he could shout, he could yell, he tolerated no nonsense. Not like a Rebbe who will smile at a student, and you know, the description of the Rebbe in his later years when it's in the video on the Rebbe's life that I brought into the world. And Chaim Soloveitchik is quoted as saying, turning around to Reb Heschel when someone said a sfer in class in the mid-70s, and he says, Heschel, since when did my father tolerate such narishkeit, such stupidity? So, you know, a Rebbe, you encourage a student. Aryeh Kroll was not like that. He called a spade, night was night, day was day, life was life, death was death. And you didn't fake around with Aryeh Kroll. He was a rough guy. When you got to strike away the surface, I never more met a more dedicated individual. And I was so embarrassed. I cannot tell you, by 1986, the walls were crumbling and the demonstrations were working. Rabbi Teitz comes here, Das Teira, and Rafal Halkin, what can I tell you? It was a sad story. I want to mention that a Talmud of mine reading Washington, a Talmud named Chaim Moshe Tesla, was very inspired by what I tell about how my wife and I had the schut, the privilege, a unique mitzvah. I don't know many people that have it, of Pidgin Shvuyim, and I write the exact date that I got the call from the Mossad, and they told me, they salute me, Hey Matzdim Li, because no one could believe I could pull it off. And I was naive, I worked, I did what I did, and God led me on the right path, and I somehow, all through my teaching, I come to Bronfman. It's a story unto itself, but this young man, Tesla, wants to do things for Jonathan Pollard. And I told him, I don't know whether it's the same Pollard already, Netanyahu has spoken, Paris has spoken, but one thing I know, if 250,000 Jews would march on the Capitol, it would send a very strong message to Obama, and particularly in an election year. And I told him, listen to the last week's shiur, perhaps it can be emulated, I don't know. Okay. Now, then I don't want to go further. I recognize the differences between Pollard and the whole question of Duvalti. I'm not that stupid not to recognize the quagmire that the Israeli government stupidly created by having Pollard as a spy or a semi-spy. Now, then we went to the Gemara Nida and the whole question of medical doctors, and once again you see how the Chachamim turned to the medical doctors. Okay. Now, I want to come into the heart of Das Teira, and this perhaps what I'm going to do today is literally coming into the very inner core. Why Gedolei Yisrael were opposed to all this idea? Why does it have such a downside? What is wrong with Das Torah? Why are we so depressed by it? Why are we so frightened by it? Okay. Pasuk in Chumash Bereishit, Perek Bet, Pasuk Zayin, Vayipach ba'apav nishmat chayim, Vayehi adam l'nefesh chaya. And the Yunkelus explains, V'napach ba'apehu nishmata v'chayei, V'havi bi'adam l'ruach mimalala. And you see, there's something in every human being, we're different than an animal. There's something of the Ribbono Shel Olam in us. There's a divine spirit, a wisdom, thought, choice. This is the greatness of the human being. The Zohar actually uses the word midalenafach, that this part of the human being that enables us to think, to choose, that's divine. And if you don't have a mind, if you don't choose, if you don't think, it is a negation of that part of God's creation, Tzelem Elohim. And the Rav put it very beautifully. New York Times, and you know, again, someone who grew up in the 40s and 50s, I still get all excited when the New York Times tells a story about Orthodox Jewry and proudly explains the Seam Shas coming up already, the New York Times has dealt with. Other achievements, you have to remember the New York Times, which was all Jews and still is predominantly Jewish, and you have to know who published the New York Times, the Salzburger family, or Bacha family, I may, could be the Salzbacha family, German origins, Torah origins, members of this very family live al admat kodesh and amak pidim b'mitzvah talakach hamura, and they became so assimilated in America, so ashamed of their heritage, and throughout the 40s into the 50s growing up, they quoted a reform rabbi. By the 50s, they quoted a conservative rabbi, an Orthodox rabbi, Manda Hashmei. No one mentioned him. By the 70s, thank God, Torah was resuscitated, that even the New York Times couldn't ignore it. And probably the turning point was when within a few weeks of each article, they had a major spread on Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik and a major spread on Moreinu V'Rabbeinu Reb Moshe Feinstein. Now, I'm quoting from the New York Times, June 23rd, 1972, page 74. Earlier this week, Rabbi Soloveitchik received a visitor in his study in Brookline and in the living room of his daughter's home nearby, and gave some of his views on present-day Judaism. He described himself as a shy person and denied that he was an authority, quote, end quote, in the usual sense of the word, quote, I have many pupils, I have many disciples, but I never impose my views on anyone, he said. Judaism, he continued, is a society of free and independent men and women bound by a single commitment and vision. And this was exactly what the Reverend planted within us. None of us are exactly alike. None of us should be alike. What does divine breath within us mean? Each one of us is different. The Mishnah in Sanhedrin, Lamed Zayin, I believe it is, the words of the Gemara, how HaKadosh Baruch Hu created every human being, and unlike a car manufacturer, where every car comes out exactly the same, that model, every human being is different. And you, the Rebbe is a Rebbe. Time and again I've quoted to you, we used to say, don't do what I do because you imitate me. Only do if you think I'm right. And time and again, and you all know the famous stories, I'm an eyewitness to some of them, but everyone tells you the story of the Rebbe could give a whole shiur that you should sit for Kiddush. And then when you come over and ask him, Rebbe, what should I do? Do what your father does. There was no question to the Rebbe. A shear is a shear, but Allah Lemaisa, you do what your father does. And there are many stories like that. I love the Havdalah one where I was an eyewitness where he had just finished this tremendous shear, and why one should sit with Havdalah, with Allah Lamdis, with so much Lamdis. And until today, I make Havdalah with the Shabbos tablecloth on the table, all the Lamdis of the Rav, that Havdalah ends the Shabbos meal and turns it into a weekday snack. And you have to end it with Havdalah on the tablecloth. And here the Rav is ready to make Havdalah, and 300 students sit down, and the Rav says, who revealed this to you? And this Rebbe, you just gave a shiur 3 weeks ago. And he was like flabbergasted, you know, the shiur is one thing, but you do what your parents did. But it's much deeper than that. And here's where the world could never really understand the Rav. Because, you see, if you march, and I just had this out with some young kid whose parents came in Aliyah ages ago, not a young kid anymore, and I know him 43 years, from the day I came in Aliyah, I know this young man. And we had a little discussion. He said, you see all the problems we have, but you know your opinion in advance. I told him, no, I never, ever know my opinion in advance. I can predict for you on every issue what Agudat Yisrael will say, because I know their mindset and I know how little they can change, how little they can ride with the waves. Only when tragedy will multiply and overrun them will somehow they'll allow the masses to shift gears. And I don't have to tell you all the problems right now with the army. We're in for a problem now with Chok Tal, and again, I'm not going to elaborate. It could either go smoothly, or it's going to take 63 years, like it took 63 years to reach this point since the state was declared. It can go smoothly, or it's going to go with bitter struggle for 63 years. Knowing the Haredi world, I can tell you in advance, it's going to go with bitter struggle until the masses knock the Rebbeim out of the box, and that's a Mishnah in Sota. Okay. Fine. That's the way the world works. Not the way my Rebbe worked. With the Rav, you couldn't predict anything. He had to think it out. So the issue comes up. He has to think it out. And you don't lo hochlim betelem. How do you say that in English? I don't know. You don't go tell him lo hochlim betelem. It's a beautiful Hebrew expression, modern Hebrew. You think. You don't just walk without thinking. Yes, Satguru, all right, it's the Loma Tzaltzel, come aloha chim to tell him. And you see, I'm going to give you an unbelievable source. This is where the world had a lot of difficulty with the Rav. Why? Because the Rav became a Mizrachiite. The Rav became an activist. You don't believe Rakefet? Rabban Lichtenstein said the same thing. It took me 9 hours to say it in my recorded tapes on the Rav religious Zionism. The Baron says it in his Hesped on the Rav. Baron says it, and you read in the Alon, the Choveret that they put out for graduates of Yeshiva Peretz Zion. The Baron says it too, and it all goes back, in my humble opinion, the major catalyst is 1943, the White House, everything we've spoken about. The Boston Rebbetzin says it, and I think that kept us on firm ground. So he became a Mizrachiite. But many times issues came up where he differed with the official stand of the Mizrahi politicians here. So where would the Rav let off steam? You got to remember, Baruch Hashem, I never made a living in my life. All right, I told you, I suffer. I don't have one grandchild who wants to go into chinuch, and they all give me the same answer. They want to make a living. Okay, they want to make a living. Fine. So, but what's the reward from a Rebbe? You have an audience of intelligent students who you can let off steam. And to let off steam, that to me is worth $1 million. Where would the Rav let off steam? By the way, someone is sitting here who was in the march in Washington. I spoke last week about the march. Morty Tarrigan was one of the 250,000 people on the White, the White House lawn? Or
on the Mall.
On the Mall, between the Capitol and the White House. One of the quarter of a million Jews. So where did the Rav let off steam? Who knows? Maria. In Shir, we were young kids. He didn't deal with us with politics. The Shir was a Shir. But in Maria, once a week, Tuesday night, the average age there was 40, 50, 60. All the rabbis were there. There were a few very brilliant women there. The Pomeranz sisters, the famous thing, worth telling you who they were, who they are. Their father was a Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim, a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he had only daughters. So all the Torah, he should have taught his sons. He taught his daughters. So the Rav once said, I think you can even hear it on one of the tapes at Maria, where he tells this guy, says a svara, he says, you don't even understand me. Ask the Pomeranz sisters to teach it to you. So there's where the Rav let off steam. Ah, but the minute the Rav said something, it went back to Israel the next day. All the big famous rabbis were there, even though there wasn't instant communication. There weren't faxes yet, certainly no email. But they picked up a phone to Israel. Then a phone call was expensive, but these big rabbis had big shuls and had telephones at their disposal. And they picked up a phone to Berg. They picked up a phone to Mahavdik. They picked up a phone to this one. Oh my gosh, and then the world caved in and they would send telegrams to the Rav. What has happened? You've left the Mizrahi. What are you saying? And the Yitzchak Rafael, these were people corresponded with the Rav, and the Rav would respond, Chas v'chalil, I'm paraphrasing. I'm going to give you the source. We can see many of these letters. The Rav would respond, Chas v'chalil, I haven't left the Mizrahi. I'm a Mizrahi. If I wouldn't be a Mizrahiite, I would be declared the Gon Hadar, the Tzadik Hadar, the Chassid. But you know what the Rav is referring to? That the right-wing world put him in Cherem, as if to speak. And he says, if I would leave Mizrahi and go back, no, he says, but in my critical sense on this issue, I differ with you. And there were issues. I can give you many examples. For instance, the Rabbi Gorin issue. With the conversion of the early 70s, also with the Langer, I think it was slightly after the Langer incident. These were incidents in my early years in Israel that had a big impact on me. Again, I can't go into detail now, but some of you know I gave many, many lectures on the Langer incident, and I walked away. Till today, I suffer because there's a history in Halacha that we do everything lahatir a mamza. Anything we can do halachically, we have a whole history of this. The Medrash Rabba speaks about the tears of the oppressed, referring to a mamza. What did the child do? The child did nothing wrong. The parents did. And here they came up, Rabbi Gorin came up with an ingenious research, how they discovered in the archives of Tel Aviv, of the social services, that they referred to the original husband of the woman as a Polish Catholic, a Polish guy. So, Ribbono shel Olam, not to join Rav Gorin because of politics, the scars in my psyche are very deep until today. So, then there was the case of the convert, the woman who's converting, the man lives in a near religious kibbutz, and he's a Kohen. And how are you Masada Kedushin, a Kohen, to a Giyoret? So, of course, they came across the Malamed Laohil, with the case in Germany, and again, it's the Malamed Laohil with the new printing in Bnei Brak. They left this tshuva out, and in the tshuva, he comes up that if you see you can't break them up, make a promise to be Shomeret Shabbat and Shomeret Tarat Mishpacha, and let them live in a civil marriage. It's better than getting married up Pialacha. Perhaps there's no love involved. You have to see the tshuva inside. So, of course, the Mizrahi jumped on this Kamotze Shalul Rav, and it saved the government at that time, because the Moshe Dayan, who was the most powerful person in Israel, was ready to bring in civil marriage. And the Rav, of course, was opposed. There was another tremendous issue which we suffer from until today, Mihu Yehudi. This issue comes about, again, let me be very brief, the Rufeisen case, Oswald Rufeisen, 1962, I believe it was. They arrive at Haifa, both from Poland, Olim Chadashim, and out comes a guy in a brown uniform of the church and a big crucifix. And the pakid from the Jewish agency says to him, "What's your religion?" He says, "I'm Jewish." And of course, that case went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court gave a terrible decision by one vote. It was a majority vote, 5-4, that Rufeisen cannot be considered Jewish because the Chok HaShvut is a civil law, a Chok Chiloni. It's not a religious law, and although Alpi Din, this is what the Chachamim from the... This would not happen today, because today on the Supreme Court, there, at this moment in time, there are 4 judges that I know of among the males that are 100% Shomer Shabbos. Could be there are more women too on the Supreme Court who are Shomrat Shabbat. But in those days, there was one religious solitary judge on the Supreme Court. And they said, Al pi halacha, he's still Jewish, Yisrael af al pi shechata Yisrael chu, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, daf mem dalid. And therefore, it's a chiloni law, a secular law. And if you ask the abbot, I'm quoting from the decision. If you ask the average person on the streets, is Rufeisen Jewish? He's wearing a crucifix. They would say no. Because of this law, that it's a secular law, then Mihu Yehudi, who is Jewish? Anyone can claim they're Jewish. It's a secular law. Tell me, who is Jewish? Yosef, Nehemiah, did you serve in the Israeli army? You serve. Good. Yosef Chaim, did you serve in the Israeli army? Yosef Chaim, don't give me a story. You didn't serve. Period. I'm not faulting you. I just want to raise an issue. You're going back to America now, right?
Unfortunately,
but you're going back. Who is Jewish? The guy in the Israeli army who lo aleinu eats chazer on Yom Kippur, risking his life for the country, speaks Hebrew. You're going back to Atlanta, Georgia, to deal with assimilated Jews speaking English. Who is Jewish? I don't know. Ask the guy on the street who is Jewish. Some will say, the guy in the Israeli army, the lieutenant colonel, who even though he does terrible things on Yom Kippur, but he's defending us and he speaks Hebrew, and this rabbi down there dealing with assimilated Jews speaking English, what kind of Jew is he? He's a friend of Jimmy Carter, that makes him Jewish. So you should know if that's the case. Anyone can claim that they're Jewish. Didn't Ben-Gurion say this? If anyone is still quoting Ben-Gurion now, when the issue came up in the 50s, if anyone is stupid enough to say they're Jewish, we need more Jews. Anyway, this became a cause celebre with a ranking officer in the Israeli Defense Forces who was an attaché to our embassy in Poland. He married a non-Jewish Polish lady, and she had no belief in God and refused to convert. She was intellectually honest. She said, I don't want to convert. And when he came back to Israel, he insisted that his two children be written in Chok HaShvut as Jews. They have, and in their Tudat Zehut, I should say, they should be written Le'om Yehudi. And that went all the way to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled they are Jewish. It's a secular law, and following the reason of 63, it is a secular law. There was a tremendous government crisis, and the Mizrahi leaders with Golda Meir worked out a compromise, worked out a new law that we suffer from until this moment. And I was totally opposed. Baruch Hashem, who am I? The Rav was opposed to. The Lubavitcher Rebbe was opposed. And the law reads in full today, Mihu Yehudi, to be qualified as a Jew under the law of return, the Chok HaShvut, if you are born to a Jewish mother or have converted. They did not define the word converted. Had the Mizrahi stood firm, they would have managed, Besofa Shel Davar, to get the law to read, who has converted, Lefi Halacha. But the wise leaders of Mizrahi, the politicians, and I remember living this and hearing it with my own ears here, I don't want to mention a name, that what does it mean, converted? It's a halachic concept. Little Rakefet, who was living in Israel 2-3 years at the time, I said to my classes that the Supreme Court will interpret converted. Sure, it's a halachic concept. There's reform halacha, there's conservative halacha, there is Orthodox halacha. They're all equally valid. It has to read, if you have converted al pi halacha, in the traditional fashion as was practiced throughout the millennium. B'chol hadorot. Gentlemen, that's exactly what happened, and you all know today that the reform and conservative conversions done outside of Israel are recognized. They separated Chok HaShvut. It's not in the Beit Din. I don't go into any more detail. The Rav was totally opposed. So the Mizrahi would shake, you're opposed, became an Agudis, became a Haredi, became this, became that. But this is, a person has to think. You have to have your own mind. We don't march like robots. God gave us brains. And you can see some of this correspondence, a very interesting volume. Reb Shloman Zalman Shragai. Recognize the name? He lived in Rehavia. He was a Hasidic Jew. I yet knew him, who was a great Mizrahi politician. He, at one time, was even the mayor of Jerusalem. Moshe Rav Kook, in 1993, published correspondence that he received. It's called Ba'ayot Aktualiyot Li'or HaHalacha, pages 123 to 126. You will see the letters by the Rav to Rav Shlomo Zalman Shragai, and you will see the Rav defending himself, and you'll wonder why. Once you've heard these last 20 minutes, you will understand why the Rav has to defend himself. And this, to me, is the greatest gift that we have. And to me, it's upsetting that in part of the world which I live and teach, the so-called religious Zionist world, today already you have a development in the religious Zionist world, what is popularly called Chadalim, Charedim Datiyim Le'umiyim. And you start to see in the Chadali world, there are elements who ape, who mimic, who simply copy the Haredi world. Das Teira, Rabbanim, know it all, this is my Rebbe, what he says, Ala Yamin Yamin, small Yamin, etc. Everything we spoke about, to my humble opinion, they are lacking the heart of education. Hanoch le'ish al pi dako, freedom to think, freedom of choice, freedom to discuss, freedom to compromise. This is very important in life. Not always are we right. That's why acharei rabim lahatot. Not always do you know it all. I don't want to mention a word, but at the funeral I was the other day, the maspid was too honest because the nifta had a problem that from youth on, he was always told he's so brilliant, he's such a genius, that he had that inability to hear other points of view, to compromise. You don't go to the barricades over erot shulayim, over footnotes. You may be right, you may be wrong. There are other scholars in the world. There are other opinions in the world. And this is so important. And this is a precious gift I got from Mori Rebbe. And this is very different than Das Teira. That's number one. Number two. And here we're living it today. You see it with your own eyes. When you talk about Das Teira, and you give so much power to individuals, to people who are basa v'dam, chas v'chalila, you can have a person who's a tzaddik and a chassid and a gon adir, and at the same time he can be off the path. Don't we have that right in the Torah? What is Parshat Shoftim about? What is a zaken mamre about? I can't be a zaken mamre. You can't be a zaken mamre. In order to be a Zakon Mamre, you have to have smicha ish mi pi ish mi Moshe Rabbeinu. You have to be a member of the Sanhedrin HaGadol, the Beis Din HaGadol. You have to be one of the greatest Rabbanim of the generation. And yet, you can make foolish decisions, and you can be, chas v'chalila, a Zakon Mamre. And this particular problem becomes the greatest challenge we have when we take Rabbanim, we elevate them, give them the status of practically being Nevi'im. You all know the sources we have quoted, a bat kol, prophecy, Ruach HaKodesh, can't be wrong, and Chas V'Chalila, we can be totally misled. And of course, I don't have to go further. The burning, terrible issue of the Holocaust. It will haunt us until Yemot HaMashiach. We will never have an answer. rabbis, I love them. Without Rabbanim, we would not be sitting here. Emunat Chachamim, I bow before Gedolei Yisrael. But that's in learning. That's in Mesorah. That's in Torah Shebichtav and Torah Shebaal Peh. Comes to practical political issues, no one knows it all. No one has Ruach HaKodesh totally. We have to think and evaluate. And just think, what would have been here had the Rebbeim said, Nala Atza Berina, had the Rebbeim, who had so much influence, the Belza, the Gera, the Munkacha, the entire Yishuv dynasty were there, many did become Zionists. Oh, had they come in Aliyah? And again, I'm not a fool. We spoke about this last week. It's a very important, or 2 weeks ago, when I dealt with Rav Dessler. I don't say every Jew would have followed, but hundreds of thousands would have come. What a different country this would have been. We have a miracle here today that religion is part and parcel of the country. It was a long struggle to reach this point. And we believe in democracy. No one is going to knock on someone's door and say, I want to go into your kitchen and check whether it's kosher. We believe in democracy. The second Aliyah built the country in 1910. That Aliyah built the country. No two ways about it. 1900 until about 92, World War I. They set down the roots, that second Aliyah. B.G. and Ben Tzvi, and ultimately Golda, and Shazar, and everyone who came. How many religious Jews came? And you see, you can be totally misled. Take a look what's happened today. Core curriculum. What are we talking about? An open Gemara, Masechet Kedushin, Daf Chaf Ted. A father is obligated to teach his children how to live in dignity, how to make a living, umanut. The Rav always said, to live in dignity. I am offended when I see young people with their hands out asking for alms, begging in a shul. Terrible. Terrible. These youth, and dressed as yeshiva boys, as Hasidic Jungle Light. This is illness. This is mental sickness. This is corruption of character. What's happened to us? And Gedolei Yisrael are opposed to children learning mathematics, computers, English. Even the greatest Zionists today, I just read Macaulay Shon, have to admit that every child has to know English. At one time, everyone here hated English. We're Israelis. But I've remembered it. I told you, I had many students came in Aliyah, never spoke English again. All right, I'm not one of them. I believe in the Ramban in HaChodesh HaZeh Lechem Rosh Chodeshim. Look what the Ramban has to say in Parshat Bar. The truth is, I should be Arnold. I shouldn't use the name Aharon. But all right, I'm not such a good Jew. I can't follow the Ramban entirely, so I use Aharon, not Arnold. But believe me, when my mother called me Arnie every morning, that was a fulfillment of the Ramban. Know where you're coming from. Chodesh Nisan. It's a Meritic Ramban. I've spoken about it many times, the Chatam Sofer, with the whole thing of Yontif Sheni. I once got up in front of hundreds of people in Israel and told them, the Yemot HaMashiach, we're going to observe Yontif Sheni. They wanted to kill me. But they came in Aliyah, they said, just to escape Yontif Sheni. But I developed the Ramban, which the Chatam Sofer develops in that famous drasha, that we have to remember where we came from. But mistakes were made. No question about it. Basic core curriculum. Is there a Torah Jew in the world who can be opposed? Show me in Southern America that kids don't learn English, math, computers. I'm a cripple in this world. I can't type. I have students. In my days, had I said, Rebbe, I want to go and take off an hour to learn how to type, they would have laughed me out of yeshiva. Sissy, put a skirt on him. What's with him? Give him a milk bottle. And you know what this says for Chinuch? I'm ashamed. This is a Chilul Hashem. It's as if to say, my Chinuch is so terrible that if the kid will learn math and computers and English, he'll leave religion. God have mercy. I would like to believe that my students, after 8, 12 years studying Torah, can go anywhere in the world and be medatek in mitzvah kala kachamura. So they're mistakes. Okay, tell me, is this Ani Rothkopf speaking? Big deal, Aaron Rakefet. What are you, a nut? You have the chutzpah to talk like this? Das Teira. Core curriculum, etc. Aveda Zara, Zakin Mamre. Gentlemen, this is why Reb Chaim Soloveitchik opposed the whole concept of Mwetzet Gedolei Yisrael and the whole concept of Das Teira. And I'm now quoting Reb Chaim, and I'll give you the sources. Don't quote Rothkopf and don't quote Rakefet, but quote Reb Chaim. And he paraphrased the Gemara in Sanhedrin. You will know the Gemara in Sanhedrin, when the Egyptians were dying, being flooded, and the Midat Harachamin, or the Midat Hadin, came before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's in Chelek, and he said, why are you killing the Egyptians? The Jews are no better. Eilu Avodei Azara? The Eilu Avodei Azara. And the Jews needed a lot of schut to be saved at that moment and not drown like the Egyptians. Reb Chaim felt, I quote, Zionism has become an Aveda Zara, and the whole concept of Das Teira can also become an Aveda Zara. What a statement. But you see, that was Reb Chaim. No one can take away the right of a Jew to think. And the Ribbono Shel Olam wants us to think. What does the Torah say? Hineni, I put before you bracha v'klala u'berchata v'chayim l'man tichyu. Choice. Without choice, we're not Jews. Without choice, there's no religion. Without choice, we're not human beings. If we didn't have choice, how can you have schar v'onesh? Isn't this what the homosexuals claim? We were born this way. We have to be this way. All right, if you take that argument further, I've told you more than once, I saw terrible tempers in my lifetime. I don't want to mention, I saw people angry at their wives or angry at their children take the tablecloth and rip it off the table with all the dishes falling on the floor, half of them breaking, etc., etc. No, my father was like that. If my Rebbe was like that, why can't I say I was born with a temper? Well, you have to do something about it. Some of us are born with tempers. Some of us love to eat. We wind up, we're 300 pounds, 350 pounds, healthy. You have to overcome it. Believe me, food, chocolate, sweets, meat, red meat, what's going on today, hot dogs. I only went back to America. Whenever I go back, the first question I'd ask when I got off the plane, can we eat in Shmuelke Bernstein's? You don't even know what Shmuelke Bernstein's was, but Shmuelke, it was on, it was off. Reb Moshe said this, Reb Moshe said that. I once looked into Shmuelke with a group of Talmidim and I saw the Mashgiach eating, spare ribs. Oh, you should have seen the sight. Now, I learned with him in Lakewood. He didn't remember because his father's given a shtickle at Rebbe in the Bronx, Spiegel. I walked over and I kissed the Mashgiach. He looked up. I said, first of all, you don't remember me. We learned in Lakewood. So I have to make a Shechti Yonah with Chiyat HaMeitim. I'm seeing you after 30 years, 40 years. But I'm so happy that you're eating the spare ribs, because if you're eating, we can eat. No, today we know that all this red meat and all this processed meat, it is a killer, capital K. gentlemen. Person has to think. You can't just march. You can't just turn it into an Aveda Zara. And you have to fight your instincts. You have to fight. You have to develop. And to Reb Chaim, giving up this ability was the worst possible concept. And Reb Chaim fought. Remember I told you the story, I don't know if it was this year, last year, when Reb Yitzchak Rabinovich, how did Agudat Yisrael come about? By the 1900s, I told you there was Chilul Shabbos all over Europe. All the fences were broken. And Reb Yitzchak Rabinovich, Reb Yitzchak Halevi, is the name that went by afterwards. Halevi Rabinovich has great-grandchildren living within walking distance of here who are named Yitzchak Halevi. And he learned in Volozhin, and he was a shtickl chassidish, and he came from Germany, he combined worlds, and the Dorot HaRishonim, Labriyut, he wrote the Dorot HaRishonim, this is what we're talking about. When he started dreaming about organizing the Jews in unity, their strength, Reb Chaim was contacted. Reb Chaim was one of the biggest names in the Torah world. We're talking 1910, okay, approximately, circa. And Reb Chaim was opposed. And he said, what you want to organize can become an Aveda Zara. More than that, I'll give you the sources in a moment. Reb Chaim gave a mashal that I heard already when I was a kid. It blew me off my feet then, and it continues to tantalize me until today. Reb Chaim was asked, why are you so opposed? Not pretty good. What is so shocking? He's a great Rabbanim. Why are you worried of Aveda Zara? And Reb Chaim said, look, in Brisk, we just got electricity. Everyone is jumping for joy. There's electricity. You fellas don't know what that means. I still remember trucks going around selling ice cubes. There were no electric refrigerators yet. Ice cubes. Chunks of ice. Going up and down selling. Really good. Different world. But electricity comes. Wow. How can electricity, one of the greatest gifts. I always asked my mother, who, as you realize, lived almost a century, I said, Mom, what was the greatest thing you saw in your lifetime? She said, indoor plumbing. Very interesting. Indoor plumbing, okay. Indoor plumbing, electricity. The way we travel today. New York, hours away, that's all. So Reb Chaim said, everyone is rejoicing about electricity. I'm not. So I asked Reb Chaim, Vasi, why aren't you rejoicing? And Reb Chaim gave an answer, wow. He said, look, till now we had kerosene lamps. So if your lamp went out and you don't have kerosene oil to put in, you went into the Beis Medrash. There was light all night. One corner they would leave, people were learning. You continued learning. You go to your neighbor, he has kerosene. Electricity goes out. The whole city is in darkness. No one can learn. Nowadays, we don't have a Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah. All right, a rabbi can make a mistake. It only affects his little community. It doesn't affect the whole world. If you have a formal Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, and they are wrong, it's like electricity. The lights are going to go out all over. It's a very profound thought. The Mizrachiites have quoted it and requoted it and used it in relation to anti-Zionism and the Holocaust and anti-Aliyah. And you all know the legendary stories that have now come out in the memoir literature. I always tell one little story, the one I've told you so many times. My grandchildren will know it. And I was a kid in college when the story broke and the Israeli papers reached New York, and I remember the impact it left. The Satmar Rebbe was, I think, 56, 57. You can check it out in Yediot Maariv. And he's visiting Israel. This is the first time he's visiting Israel since the end of the Holocaust. He came here and the land spat him out. He wound up in Switzerland, he went to America. Rabbi Braunschweigel was on the same boat with the Satmar Rebbe coming to America from Switzerland. I heard stories from him about that boat trip. But by 56, 57, the Rebbe is rebuilding Satmar in America. The Hungarians, I apologize, yesterday I hit a frame over the head with the Hungarians, but the Hungarians are rebuilding in America. And the Satmar Rebbe is now somebody. And he visits Israel, and it's front page news, and the police chief of Kiryat Tayovo comes to see the Rebbe. And the Rebbe looks at him and says to him, "What would your father say to see you standing before me without a beard and payas?" And the police chief says to him, "Rebbe, if my father had not listened to you, he would be standing here with me at this moment." And of course, the Satmar Rebbe gave that unbelievable answer that no one understands until today. Mir masach tshuva getan. We did a lot of tshuva. There's another story about the Satmar Rebbe that everyone knows, that is documented. He was saved by the Jewish agency, by the Kastner train. When he became such an anti-Zionist in America and demonstrations against Israel, when, as the Rav said, the hands of the world were still covered with Jewish blood. So they asked the Rebbe, "Who saved you? The Jewish agency." And the Rebbe said, "No, not the Jewish agency, not the Zionist. The Ribbono Shel Olam saved me." No, I would have said to the Satmar Rebbe, "Yeah, but who was the Shliach? That the Ribbono Shel Olam may mitu machayeh. None of us deny. We are all believers. We are all believers. But who is the Shliach? May Zakayim yobsei schut." Gentlemen, Reb Chaim, very profound, very deep, and very succinct in his opposition. One more story that I'm going to run the sources by you, because I don't want you to quote Rakefet, quote the sources. We all live in our own world. I grew up, fortunately, in Lithuania, 150, 160 years ago. Well, what did I see in Lithuania? I saw the yeshivat, the Rosh Yeshiva, the Balei Musa. I'm just listening now to the Rav being Maspid, Rav Yaakov Moshe HaKohen Lesson, the Mashgiach of the Yeshiva. With all due respects to Rav Miller, it's not Rav Lesson, but Rav Lesson in the year 2013 would have no success. Rav Miller is the right man in the right time, but Rav Lesson tied us together with Rav Nutan Zvi Finkel, the altar, and did wonders for me. You know how much I owe Rav Lesson. Yitzchak too owes Rav Lesson. I owe Rav Lesson even more than Yitzchak, because I have the only smicha he gave all the years he was in America. All right. We never saw Hasidim. They were in Poland. Once in a while, a Hasidic younger man wandered into Slabodka, wandered into Novodik, wandered into Telz, wandered into Mir. We certainly never saw German Orthodoxy. Ah, Herr, Rabbiner, Doctor, a different world. Wow, didn't speak Yiddish, German. Proper German, dignified, Van Dyke, could speak to Gentiles as well. No, when a Chassid and a Litvak and a German Jew meet, it's a cultural shock. It's a cultural shock. Agudat Yisrael sought to bring them together. There were preliminary meetings. To the first preliminary meeting, I believe it was 1912, Reb Chaim went. I heard the story so many times from so many different members of the family. So Reb Chaim goes to the preliminary meeting. No, he knew Chassidus Rebbein. That much he knew from Brisk already. Reb Chaim had a shtickle of Chassidus soul. As you see, it reflects in the Rav. And he would say that the world doesn't realize that my Zayda had Chassidus in him. Certainly he had appreciation for Chassidus, had appreciation for Rebbe's davening and a Rebbe's kiddush. You know, where there was Kedusha, Vitara. But he goes to the meeting and he hears the Litvisha, Chassidusha, and then this German rabbi. No one knows the name, so we can all guess. I don't know. I could mention a name. I also have my guess involved who it was. But here's this German rabbi speak, and he walks out and goes back to Brisk, and he says, "That's it. I have nothing to do with Agudat Yisrael. It's not for me." No. Elu Avedazara, Elu Avedazara, Zokin Mamre, whatever you want to say. So they asked Reb Chaim, "Rebbe, why, what got you so upset?" And Reb Chaim says, "I can only pronounce one word, Torah. I heard this German rabbi speak for 45 minutes. He inspired, he yelled, he shouted. Not one word of Torah. I can't deal with it. We have nothing in common." And that was Reb Chaim's. Then he gave the famous mashal. Story reverberates. Again, I heard it from so many different members of the family, as if they were standing there. Reb Chaim said, "When my father came to Slutsk, in Slutsk Rav, Yosef Dov Halevi, it's before Brisk. So he sent my grandmother, my mother, went shopping. She comes into the vegetable store and there's this teenage kid working there. And she says to the kid, 'How much are the carrots?' The kid says, 10. 10 kopeck, 10 ruble, whatever. 'How much are the tomatoes?' The kid says, 10. "How much are the potatoes?" 10. The woman goes over to the store's owner and says, I don't understand. Everything is one price?" He says, "Lady, this kid has a speech problem. The only number he can say is 10. So whenever you ask him, he said, 10. Reb Chaim said, "I have a speech difficulty. The only word I can pronounce is Torah. And if a rabbi speaks for 45 minutes and I don't hear Torah, sources, shas, paiskim, Torah, shabbat, this is not for me." And Reb Chaim ran away, pshuto kimashma'o. Gentlemen, some of the sources. Tradition. You've heard of tradition. Summer 1992. The Israeli chief rabbinate, author, Moreinu v'Rabbeinu, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. For Israelis, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. I quote, "Reb Chaim's refusal," I'm quoting from page 32. Summer 1992. You can get it online. Those of you who subscribe, I actually have an issue of tradition that I'll give away in a minute, but I'll tell you something fascinating from it. It's the latest issue. Reb Chaim's refusal early in the century to join and implicitly be subordinated to a nascent Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah is typical. Electricity, having then been recently introduced in Brisk, he observed that it is presumably represented real progress. Yet he noted, one could not ignore a disturbing factor Previously, if a kerosene lamp was extinguished in one location, no other was adversely affected. Henceforth, however, if a failure were to occur at the power station, the whole of Bris would be plunged into darkness. Now, what the Baron is dealing with in the article is the chief rabbinate. How do you relate to a chief rabbinate? Do we give them all this authority? Do we allow them to speak ex cathedra? Do we give them quote-unquote das Torah? And you can see, of course, from this quote from Reb Chaim, that Reb Baron was opposed. The Rav, too, I don't have to tell you that, although my own opinion is, and I have to be very honest with you, in my humble opinion, had the Jews in Tel Aviv had a little bit seichel, and Rabbi Menachem Ganak's uncle, who I quote, I yet spoke with him, he's no longer alive, it's a footnote, had they had seichel in 1935, the Rev would have been elected chief rabbi of Tel Aviv and would have gone on to become the chief rabbi of the state of Israel. There is no telling how the Rav would have developed. In my opinion, and again, it's open to discussion, Tova Lichtenstein, Dr. Tovas raised this issue, what would have happened to the Rav? Would he have succeeded? I believe, yes, he would have interacted just like he interacted with the Boston scene. The fact that he came here in 1935 looking for the chief rabbinate of Tel Aviv shows you he was not yet at home at Boston. He had not yet conquered America. He had not yet become a New Englander. He had not just become a Brahmin, a fan of New England. Look it up in Webster's Unabridged and understand what I'm saying. He still was a greenhorn in America. And wow, had he come to Israel, it's overwhelming how that man would have developed interacting with the scene, no two ways about it. When he was offered the chief rabbinate on a golden platter in 1959, 1960, when I was still in the classroom with him, and he at times shared his thoughts with some of the Talmidim he was close with, and here Rav Herzog had died, he rejected it. And many reasons are given why he rejected it. I think the most basic reason is very simple. In life, Hakol Talui B'Mazal, I've said this so many times, the right person in the right place at the right time. In 1935, he was the wrong person in the right place, but it was the wrong time. Maybe he was the right person in the wrong place at the wrong time. May you follow? You can play with it, but one part of the equation was missing. 1960, it was the wrong time already, the wrong place. He was much older. His health already was not perfect. He was going to go through and had just gone through a major, major operation that basically no one thought. I can tell Daniel, at that time, a cancer operation was generally fatal. You understand what I'm saying? It was not like today, where Baruch Hashem, in various forms of cancer, there's a good rate of success, a medium rate of success, but Be'ezrat Hashem, there is always a chance, essentially today. And they come with this offer. All right, I think that's the most basic reason of all. It was the wrong time in the wrong place. The Rev already was the Rev. YU was YU. Boston was Boston. Maimonides was Maimonides. And he was totally integrated on the Western Hemisphere Torah scene. But one of the reasons that were given, and the Rev gave it himself, that what is the chief rabbinate? It's like a formal body. That's not rabbinate. The Rabbanit is an individual who rises to the top on his own because of his tzidkut, because of his learning, because of his chesed, because of his lifestyle. But you can't formalize a Rabbanit. And this is why Reb Chaim was opposed. And this is the electricity, and this is the fear that someone will become a form of Avodah Zarah, and I'll actually show you that black and white. Okay. Let me go further. I want to tell you in parentheses that with all the opposition and the Rav and Reb Chaim, so how do you deal with Sanhedrin? You have a formal Sanhedrin. They have formal power. But you see with a Sanhedrin, it's halachically determined. There's a whole Gemara, the Rambam, and we know what Chavrei Sanhedrin are and how you become a Chavrei in Sanhedrin and how the Chavrei Sanhedrin sits and how you put it to a vote. So there was a check and balance system. What Reb Chaim feared and what the Rav alludes to and what Reb Aaron Lichtenstein alludes to, that with a Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah and with a chief rabbinate, there is no check and balance. And I have to say that with both, that fear has proven 1,000% correct. A Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah that enabled the Israeli government to give back Gush Katif and bring endless tragedy upon the Jewish people. And these are the facts. These are the facts. Agudat Yisrael made it possible. I lived it. I saw it. It was tangible. Everyone knows about it. We all are here. Can't deny what happened 10 years ago. God have mercy on us. The price we are paying, the price we have paid, and the price we will yet pay for the stupidity of Agudat Yisrael that enabled the Israeli government to go along with Sharon and own it. It's overwhelming. And by the way, the chief rabbinate right now, could you imagine a chief rabbinate that declares the OU not reliable? Haagen-Dazs ice cream. And we didn't yell, we didn't shout, we should have been demonstrating. How dare you declare Haagen-Dazs not kasher? It's beyond words. Who are you? Where do you come to the chief, to the OU? Where do you come? The greatest Kiddush Hashem that American Jewry has created is the Hashkacha of the OU. Do you have any idea what Hashkacha was like in America before the OU? Are you familiar with Dr. Hal Gatzworth's doctorate at Columbia University? Fraud, Corruption, and Holiness? Get the doctorate. Read it. It was published. It's a university publication. Read what went on before the OU. And what a Kiddush Hashem and money and how they have it worked out. And Rabbanim, it's not, you are not paid directly, you're paid by the OU. It's beyond words, the check and balance system, how the OU works. Show me one kashrut organization in the world that's on the level of the OU. And the Haraya, the Eidah Haredit, works hand in hand with the OU. But the chief rabbinate? These are sub-level individuals. They must have an IQ of 85. I don't know. It's frightening to me. Haagen-Dazs not kosher. I remember being at the end of the world in Cairns, Australia. What do you eat? What do you eat? You go across the street to the supermarket, and there's Haagen-Dazs, OUD, made in France. Let alone all the other products. Baruch Hashem, Cairns, Australia. It's frightening. How right Reb Chaim was, and how right Mori Rebbe, and how right Amiti HaDagul, Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. But that's not all. Gentlemen, how many of you are fans of the Soloveitchik family and know the inner workings of that brilliant, beautiful, illustrious family? Reb Moshe had 5 children. As I've told you more than once, I was privileged to know all 5 and study with all 3 sons. Reb Aaron Soloveitchik, what a embodiment of tzidkut. What an individual. Chesed and learning. And as Reb Aaron Lichtenstein said about Reb Aaron, he was self-made. The Rav grew up in America, and the Rav grew up in Europe, the Rav grew up in Chaslavich, the Rav grew up when his father had plenty of time to teach him. and his father was at home, and his father was in his native habitat. Rabbi Aaron comes to America right after his bar mitzvah, and you all know, right away, in the middle of the Depression, had a million problems on their minds. So Rabbi Aaron sat in Rabbi Moshe's shir from the day he came to America, high school and college, etc. But he didn't have that individual attention with his father like the Rav. He didn't get smacked like the Rav got smacked. Do you know? And the Rabbi Shmuel used to tell me, I ran away, but my brother stood in there until he knew it. I was self-made. And Rabbi Aaron left six children, all six. The sons of the Lord, the sons, all involved in chinuch and the rabbinate. I need not tell you. One of the sons lives in the old city, and I consider him the biggest Soloveitchik alive today, probably of all the Soloveitchiks, including the Gula crowd. His name is Rabbi Yosef Halevi Soloveitchik. He's the middle son of Rabbi Aaron. His problem is he's not only a gaon, but he's a tzaddik. And that's a problem. Gaonis and tzidkut at times, you know, when the anecdotal story when the Chofetz Chaim met Reb Chaim, and the Chofetz Chaim says to Reb Chaim, fire gaonis, but they get that sign met tzaddik for you. Go, oh, much, you should be more tzaddik. And then Reb Chaim answers to the Chofetz Chaim, for your tzidkut, you should be more gaon. It's an anecdotal story, but they don't tell that story about you and me, you understand? So I know Reb Yosef very well. And he's bucking, he can give a shear in Kodshim Tarit. I mean, you have no idea what we're dealing with. But he suffers. He saw what his father went through. Anyway, there was an interview with him in a Haredi magazine. It's B'Kehilah. And this is like their magazine section, Kolot. And this interview appeared 21 of August 2008. And here, Rabbi Yosef, among other things, it's a beautiful interview. And I give the magazine credit that they published it and weren't afraid of being put into cherem. And he says, be quoting from page 8 on, my great-grandfather, Reb Chaim, was very opposed to Agudat Yisrael. And he quotes, Yesh avod zara shel hatzionut, v'yesh avod zara shel Agudat Yisrael. And he was very worried, my Zayda, that if you give such power to Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah, who will check? Who will control them? Who will see to it that what they're doing is correct? Hold on. And Rabbi Yosef Soloveitchik pulls out a letter that his father wrote in Yiddish to Reb Chaim Ezer Gerzinski. And Baruch Hu Katav, B'Tirgum Chavshi, Acha HaSeifa B'Katavich, Avich Echlit Litnaged L'Tnuat Agudat Yisrael, Shekein Hino To'en She'en L'Tnua Guf Mevaker, V'Ein Lo Emun, Ba'askaneha. Anan, ha-hinchem matziyim shumetzik dole ha-torah tiyah ha-guf ha-mamakeh, aval avitama, eisem maimad hilchati verech al-pi din tori yesh mu'etzik dole ha-torah she'ein la takdim b'makorat. And that's exactly what I told you, that he writes to Reb Chaim. See, Reb Chaim Isaac Grzynski was very close to the Soloveitchik family. Again, there's a lot I know that I can't say publicly. There's criticism back and forth. He was upset with the Rav going to Berlin. But all right, Reb Chaim Moshe was Reb Chaim Moshe. And he was very close, and he knew Reb Chaim yet from Brisk, although he is older than Reb Chaim, or was learning, he knew Reb Chaim yet from Voloshin, I should say, even though I don't believe he was older than Reb Chaim, but he was not totally part of Reb Chaim's crowd with the new approach to learning. Reb Chaim Moshe was more from the older school, what we call before Matan Torah. And evidently Reb Chaim Moshe was trying to influence Reb Moshe Soloveitchik to take an active part in Agudat Yisrael. And Reb Moshe quotes his father writing to Reb Chaim Moshe that My father felt there was no bikoret, there was no control. What is Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah? And look at the word he throws, and we're going to come back to this next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, throws in the word Askanecha. Remember, gentlemen, Rabbanim are limited in power. They need help. You have to have askanim. That's the modern Haredi word. How would you say that in English? Lay people who are activists, askanim. Who are the askanim? What are their values? How many askanim are in jail today? What has gone on with money? What were you talking about? The Gabbai of the Shpinker Rebbe just went back into jail. He refuses to testify in L.A. You have, I think it's 102 people who were ultimately arrested in the money laundering scandal. Nope, he's not allowed to testify against a fellow Jew. I'm back to jail. They can throw the key away. They can keep him indefinitely, if I'm not mistaken, according to American law. I think also according to Israeli law. Refuses to testify. So, Shpinker Rebbe's Gabbai. Who did they just arrest? The puppet of a Rebbe's Gabbai. Also, terrible scandal. The Baba of a Rebbe's Gabbai, years ago, drugs, planes, frightening. These are askanim. Yet these are askanim. And they're feeding the info to the Rebbe, to the Rabbi, to the Rav. And this is what the Chaim is saying. Who's going to watch these people? Who can trust these people? How can you let Gedolei Yisrael be led by these people? And if you say the rest of Gedolei Yisrael, they're the ones that will, they will be mavake themselves, they will control themselves, they will criticize themselves, they will watch themselves. But what halachic framework do they have? And this is exactly what I told you, why the Sanhedrin is different, because there it's the Baruch Hashem Zu Halacha with an entire system with safeguards built in to the very system. But where do you have safeguards today in Moetzet Gedolei HaTorah when you can have a meeting in America just a few weeks ago with the so-called Gedolei Yisrael sitting there and a speaker declaring that the greatest enemy the Jewish people have is Reb Netan Slifkin? It's beyond words. Had I not seen it or heard it with my own ears, I wouldn't believe anyone had told me this. Beyond words. And Reb Yosef Halevi continues. And let me tell you a story, he says. At that original meeting in Katowice, one of the students, a Talmud, Reb Shimshon Raphael Hirschfitzal, got up and spoke beautiful German. Na'am b'germanut ne'um chotzev lahavut al mechitzuta v'chashibuta shel hatnua shetakum, a magnificent Russian that put Rakefet to shame with his rhetorical ability about the importance of a good Yisrael. When he finished speaking, everyone clapped hands. L'noeim hamohula, what a great speaker. Only Reb Chaim didn't clap hands. And they asked him, Rebbe, Vasi, why not? And he says, when my father, the Beit HaLevi, came to Schlitz, my mother went into the vegetable store, Liarkon, and she asked the kid who worked there, how much is a kilo of agbaniyot? 10, the kid said. She asked him about potatoes, 10. Everything she asked, all the answers was 10. She went to the owner and said, what does this mean? Can't all be the same price? And the owner explained, Habachur megamgen, v'yeinu yodea lebateka chagun, shum mila, chutz mecha mila hazu, esa, tsen. Afanisiyein Reb Chaim, megamgen hinini, eini mevin shum mila, chutz meyashecha mila Torah. Mikivin shahano shahanoem hamelumad lo hesket hamilah hazu velo pamachat bidrasho hanifteret ein li lespoke kaf lenaum kazeh. My dear friends, this is brisk. This is the Soloveitchik family. You think about it. If there's no words of Torah, I can't clap hands. And this is what the Rav taught us. I'll never forget this. I quote him syllable by syllable. Whenever you give a talk, whenever you give a speech, whenever you give a drasha, always quote a maimon chazal. That's what makes you unique. That's what makes you different. That's what makes you an Orthodox rabbi. The Stam give a drasha, any Reform rabbi, any conservative reverend can get up and give a drasha. But that's our uniqueness. And I have to tell you, I took it seriously. In all my years in the rabbinate of teaching, public speaking, drashad, I have never spoken without quoting a Maimon Chazal. Sometimes I twist it, yes, Dashanur, homiletics, that's my privilege. Thank God. I saw great Dashanim in my life. And believe me, they knew how to dashen. You make that Russia dance, you make that Maimon Chazal captivate the audience. Say what you want to say, but put it into the words of Chazal. That's a Rav. That's a Rebbe. Okay, I want to go further, but yes, Nechemia, what did you want to say?
Why did Reb Chaim say that Zionism was a Avodah Zarah? Was it a similar critique of
There it was much, much worse. And you see, Zionism so captivated the masses that people threw away everything and just bowed to Zionism. And you see, the masses became social Zionists, Bundist Zionists, free Zionist, Chelet Zionist, but very few retain Torah. That's what he's referring to. And you should know that this Vod is how I write about it in Washington. It was one of my, when I left Michalá, the reason I left Michalá is not for now, but I left Michalá, you know, on my own indignity. I'm the only one from the old faculty who still speaks to everyone. I shake hands with everyone because after I left, there were terrible fights there and the old timers don't speak to one another. But I'm friendly with everyone. I left. I saw certain things bothered me. It's not for me. Baruch Hashem. Okay. So at Mr. Gruss's shiva for his wife, for Caroline, Mayor Burgless came to me and spoke to me. He wants to organize this new school. Would I help him, etc.? Okay, so Midrashit Maria comes to be. So we begin Midrashit Maria. I taught for 15 years. I left afterwards to devote myself to Washington. So he didn't want to take students. At the start of the year, kids go to various schools. They're unhappy. They want to switch. So two girls came to him. We had, I think, the first year 53 girls, which was a good beginning. So two girls came to Rabbi Burgless and said to him that they can't tolerate Michalá, they'd have to leave, and he sent them to me. I should interview them because I had taught Michalá. And these were two girls from London. I can tell you their names. They're both living in Israel today, if I'm not mistaken. And these two girls came, and I said, why do you want to leave Michalá? It's a good school. Yeah, I taught there. I said, I left for my reasons. But they said, no, and this person in Michalá, one of their main rabbis, if not the main rabbi, got up and gave a talk. It was rushed before Yom Kippur. In every generation there is Avodah Zarah, and in our generation the Avodah Zarah is Zionism. And the girl said, we grew up in Bnei Akiva. I said, that's what he said? Bring me your recording. You have it? Yeah, we'll bring it. Next day they bring me a recording. Sure enough, I said to Rabbi Burgless, take these two girls, and they were among our best students that year. Now, what does it mean, Avodah Zarah? Yeah, you see the state of Israel. People gave their lives to build it. It's Avodah Zarah. Where is God? Where is Torah? You haven't heard these words. It's not so true today, thank God, because of the miracle that has happened here. But Ribono Shel Olam, what was it like when we came in Aliyah? Yikashrit, Shabbat. Who would ever dream that in the biggest Air Force base in the country, they built a $100,000 mikveh? You follow? And yet you should know that when they wanted to dedicate it in public, the army wouldn't allow it for fear, because the higher echelon of officers, even though a few of them are 100% from, 100%, but the higher echelon is still totally detached from what Torah is all about. They have no concept. You saw it with Shirat Nashim. I mean, I'm not troubled, Shirat Nashim. I'm the Talmud of the Rabbi, but a Chassidish younger man. Someone raised in the Chadali world, where he's taught, call the Isha Eva, period, without any explanations, without any subjectivity. You want him to serve in the army. How can you force him to hear Shirat Nashim? How can you throw out people in Kurs Katzinim because they walked out? This is terrible. It shows a lack of sensitivity and ignorance of the highest order. You follow me? So I understand it, but God forbid to say Avodah Zarah. Did you hear Rakefet's lectures on why Zionism had to come about just through Herzl? That's the greatest lecture I ever gave in my life. That Midrash Rabbah that I uncovered, Amita Shel Torah, that Yosef Chaim, that was not Dashanut. That was Amita Shel Torah. You claim it's Dashanut, you met at the Midrash Rabbah, not at Rakefet. Got it? Okay. Gentlemen, no, Charlie, you believe me? You don't believe me? Let me give you another source. Rav Shach, do you believe? You just told me before you know Rav Heschel. You don't know Rav Heschel longer than I do. I know him as I write in Washington the day he came from Philadelphia to New York. He was my brother's chavruta for many years. My brother and Heshi and Levi learned together for many years. Today it's a Rav Heschel Shachter, Dr. Levi Roy. I have to have respect for them. But in those days, they were little kids. Okay, someone challenged me last week on what I said about Mitzitza B'Peh, that the rebels opposed. Oh, I Xerox, Rav Heschel writes about it, you can take later. Oh, now no one challenges me, Rav Shachter wrote. Okay. I'm quoting from his latest book of the three volumes dealing, David, with the Rav and what the Rav thought. And as you know, with Olam Katan, it's an explosive article. Okay. Divrei HaRav, Tzvi Shechter, Yerushalayim, 2010. Page Resh Lamed Zion. He's talking about the Rav and politics and how Rabbi Norman Lamb, Rav Nachum Lamb, is talking to the Rav, and the Rav, and he's asking the Rav his view, and he's asking the Rav his Das Torah, and the Rav says, this is not my Das Torah. He says, this is what I think as an intelligent individual. And in brackets, Rav Heschel writes, V'davar ma'anyein shamati me'harav benachim genak sheikhis az ish mipiyish. It's three of us now involved. Aaron Rakefet quoting Rav Heschel Shachter, who's quoting Rav Nachum Genak, who stands at the head of the OU. And if you know Rav Nachum Genak, he's a ziskite of a human being and a real Yirei Shamayim, etc. Talmud Chacham, Sheshama Pamei Rebbeinu, Sha'ad shehigia l'America lo shama be'Europa shishtamshu b'vitui hazeh shel Das Torah. Yes, this whole concept of Das Torah didn't exist. This is Agudat Yisrael's biggest problem, that as I showed you, the one place in Shas that Das Torah is mentioned has absolutely nothing to do with the concept of Das Torah as it is utilized today. So, gentlemen, it's a post-World War I invention. It became extremely popular after World War II. In the United States, it's a rubric that becomes a catalyst in determining the difference between the Haredi world and the broader world that integrated with Western civilization. I don't want to use the word modern Orthodox world because I am not modern Orthodox. I don't believe in it. I don't believe it's possible. My Torah is total and complete. I'm a fanatic when it comes to observing halacha, just like my Rebbe. Modern? Yes, I believe Miluat Haaretz v'Kivshuha, Torim Derech Eretz, in the sense of Geva Toshev Anochi Imachem, we all live in the big world in addition to our little Jewish world, and we all have an obligation to conquer both worlds, L'Kavod L'Tiferet. So, of course, this concept of Das Torah, the way it's used, and I'm going to come back to it next week with some very painful examples of what I have experienced in Das Torah, and we're going to come back next week to why I fear for Avodah Zarah and give you a classic example right before your eyes, and you can agree with me or disagree, because I'm coming up against a tremendous authority, Gaon Tzaddik, and nevertheless, on this issue, on this she'ela, I think Rav Ovadia Yosef was in the wrong camp, and I'd be interesting to see how you react to my critique. But gentlemen, these problems are real. So I began with a disclaimer: if you need Das Torah, you need a black hat, you need that feeling, I'm part of the crowd, I'm part of the group, I want someone to think for me. If you're like that chassid on the bus who told me back in 1969, check whenever there were elections right after I came, and it was Tisha B'Av, and we're on the bus, and we're having a wonderful conversation, and I say to him, who will you vote for? And he tells me, whoever the Rebbe will tell me to vote for. If that's the level you live on, and your Yiddishkeit needs that, chas v'chalila, erase every syllable you heard today. If you come from a world that thinks, and you're motivated by intellectualism, and you've studied Torah, and you've been exposed to Gedolei Yisrael, and been exposed to Reb Chaim Brisker and his descendants, then, of course, today's lecture may have been very helpful. Why the opposition? Why Reb Chaim? Why the Rav? Why would... Because it takes away the dignity of the human being, the dignity to think, the dignity to be critical. We have part of God within us, and that gives us the ability to choose. And the Rav, the difficulty people had with the Rav, the Mizrahi and others, he never walked as a blind robot. He constantly thought the letters to Rav Shragai are very revealing, and that volume can still be gotten. When Mosar Rav Kook has sales, they get rid of all their old volumes that they want to get out of stock and out of storage. You can buy them up for 10 shekel apiece. Believe me, my wife blindfolds me when those ads come in, because there's no room, and if you would know what goes on in my house with the Sfarim and the Sfarim I have here in my office and the Shem Yerachim. You know what a wealthy man is? A wealthy man is a man who has room to display all his books. You don't have to have one book in front and four books behind. Unfortunately, Rakefet is not wealthy, and he is Makayim the Pusik all the time. Ubir bistei acher. He constantly has to look for Sfarim in libraries, and he could afford to buy half of them, but where do you put them? Reb Chaim was the star of today's Shia. Elu Aveda Zara, Elu Aveda Zara. The whole story with the Yarkon, with Reb Yosef Dov. It's a fabulous story. Das Teira, imagine the Rav never heard the word before he arrived in America. I can tell you I know a lot more of what the Rav has said, but it's private conversation, and it's very sharp. The Rav was very sharp, so I don't have to repeat it. You get the message, plain and simple. My dear friends, we have class next week. Those are the final two classes before the Pesach break. I don't know whether the trip to London will work out. I'm waiting to hear from them. But the minute I know, I hope by next week I can announce al hayamin val hasmol what is happening. It's not just to London, it's to London, Manchester, Great Britain, book launches, etc. It should have happened months ago, but I couldn't leave Israel due to my mother's illness, zichrona levracha. And the people in London, in England, are still interested, so I have to go along. I want to show you a number of things before the freebies. You want to see how the army is changing, how the world is changing. These are recent issues of B'Machaneh. Here's an entire issue devoted to religious women in the army. Now, years ago, you never dreamt this would happen. And Rabbanim, some have made their peace with it, some not. Rakefet has made his peace. Women can do everything today. They want to be in the army too. Fabulous articles on how the army accommodates them and what they're doing in the army. And I have to tell you, very inspiring to see these five young ladies, two of them married, beautiful head covering, and they're in Tzva Hagana Yisrael.
I think you'll also see that their unit badge is orange, a flower coming out of a book.
And 1 second, and what is...
Correct?
I see the intelligence signias here. I don't know all the others I can't see, but what is that? That's in Chinuch, that's the Morat Chayalat. Then this is also a recent issue. I couldn't get over what they have in here. Here, these are, how many soldiers? 8, 9, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. These are 8. 8 religious boys who came in Aliyah from the United States and Canada, share an apartment in Rehavia. All of them are Kravi. Eight of them are Tzantchanim. Seven of them are Tzantchanim. One is not Tzantchan, but they're all frontline soldiers in the IDF. And each one, they give you their background and where they studied, where they learned, and why they came in Aliyah. It is unbelievable. Then, here they do the family of the month. Here's Mishpachat Sa'ada. Take a look at a beautiful family. He's a high-ranking officer. She teaches in a Chinuch Atzmai school yet. And three wonderful children. Ashrei Ayin Ratazot. But not just that. In the picture of the unit they give of the week, this is from the Golan. They're in a course Plugabet and course Makim. Look at the yarmulkes. No wonder they say that to get into the Golan. If you're not wearing a kippah, they're not going to take you in. It's unbelievable, the miracle we have against all odds. Now, these are three journals given out at Rabbi Riskin's dinners with Torah from Rabbi Riskin in them. If anyone wants, welcome to it. And this is the latest tradition. I just want to call your attention to a Sheila that is asked. J. David Bleich has a fabulous article on wine, if a Mechalel Shabbos touches wine. So, and this story has to be anecdotal. If I told it to you, stop me. I can't believe this actually happened. One of the great Pelesha Gaonim, Reb Meir Domplatsky, visits America in the early 1920s to raise funds for his yeshiva in Europe. And a Jew comes over to him on the east side and says, Rebbe, I want to ask you a question. Do I have to put tefillin on Shabbos? And Reb Meir looks at him. What do you mean put tefillin on? He says, Rebbe, I learned in my youth, you know, I'm a Talmud Chacham, and I know that the reason we don't put tefillin on Shabbos is that Shabbos is an ice, an oath, a sign that God exists, and tefillin is a sign. When you have Shabbos, you don't need tefillin. He says, in America, unfortunately, to make a living, I've become a Mechal of Shabbos. Since I work on Shabbos, do I have to put tefillin on? If anyone wants the tradition, it's yours. Reb Heschel Schechter, quoting the Rav on Metzitza Beper, until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.
That's a
shiner
that you're crying.
Isn't that unbelievable? Yeah.
About that, about the,
yeah, I understand.